Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC with me, Manuela Zaragoza. Coming up, the economic life of Gaza.
We would love to trade with Gaza, but it hasn't been possible since 2006. Basically, Gaza is sealed off by land, sea and air.
But we're asking, what's the potential of Gaza's economy?
We're talking about a very entrepreneurial group of people who've obtained high levels of education.
That's all here in Business Daily from the BBC.
The customers who came here were from all backgrounds. Children, students, writers, novelists, and even university professors would come to us.
Samir there used to run a bookshop in the Gaza Strip, the Samir Mansour Bookshop for Printing, Publishing and Distribution. It was a cultural meeting point in the territory. Then, on an early morning in May this year, at the height of the hostilities between Hamas and Israel, Samir was watching the news and saw that the area his bookshop is in was about to be hit by an Israeli airstrike.
As soon as I saw it on the news, I immediately ran out before the final rocket. There is a preliminary missile to warn and then one to destroy. Within 7 minutes, I was in front of the building. It was not destroyed yet. Then they fired the missile and I saw the building collapse. I felt that my soul was leaving my body as I watched the bookshop being destroyed. It was difficult for me because I saw all of my efforts and a life spent in this field evaporate in seconds. The building was going down and my soul was going up. This was my future, the future of my kids, my history, my memories, my achievements, all of my hopes and dreams gone in seconds.
A fragile ceasefire means that 11-day volley of rockets and airstrikes between Israel and Hamas in Gaza in May this year is now over. Samir hopes to one day rebuild his bookstore, but his is just one of numerous reconstruction efforts now needed. The latest conflict destroyed or damaged thousands of homes in Gaza, as well as schools, hospitals and vital infrastructure such as water and electricity. The Israeli military says it attacked more than 1,000 militant targets in response to rockets fired out of the territory. There were casualties on both sides, 256 killed in Gaza, according to the UN, and 13 people killed in Israel. It's now down to the international community to finance Gaza's reconstruction.
I'm Elizabeth Campbell. I'm the director of the UNRWA office in Washington, D.C.
UNRWA is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. So far, it's appealed for $40 million in emergency humanitarian aid following the May conflict.
And that has been funded at about 70% to date. And we expect that we will be coming out in the coming days with a revised reconstruction appeal. We don't have the exact figure yet, but it'll be significantly higher in additional funds.
Almost $1 billion more has also been pledged by Egypt and Qatar to rebuild Gaza. Will all that promised aid be delivered? According to a Brookings Institution report, after the previous Israeli-Hamas hostilities of 2014, money pledged in aid to Gaza was slow to come through. That's in part because of concerns it would have fallen into the hands of Hamas, the Palestinian group that controls Gaza with its 2 million inhabitants. And Hamas is regarded as a terrorist group by Israel, the US, and the EU.
So for the funding that has been provided to us so far for the initial response, we're operating under those set of international accountability standards. And that is the way that we will continue to go forward as we move toward the reconstruction phase and as we appeal for additional funding for that. So to underscore, UNRWA is completely independent from any government entity, from any political actor, including especially Hamas. And we do not coordinate with them or work together with them in any way. And we have long-standing safeguards in place to ensure that our monies and operations are not politicized by anyone.
So if UNRWA does not operate with Hamas in any way, how do you channel all that money into Gaza, given that Hamas controls Gaza?
So we run a school system, a healthcare system, and a food distribution system. And those systems are completely independent from anything in which Hamas is involved. So our school system is run by our teachers, hired by UNRWA, trained by UNRWA. It's the same with our healthcare system and our food distribution. We have a robust relationship with our donors and share regularly with them all types of information, including about our staff, to ensure that the integrity of our operations.
Meantime, though, Gaza is subject to an Israeli and Egyptian blockade, with Israel repeatedly saying that building materials going into Gaza were diverted to build a network of Hamas tunnels. Everything and everybody going into and out of the territory is now controlled. And Israeli checks were tightened after Hamas reinforced its power in Gaza back in 2007. But the blockade is an effective straitjacket on Gaza's economy.
I mean, to be able to bring the economy back, it would require an easing of the land, sea, and air blockade and a movement of people to access employment and to generate income. That is absolutely what is required to reverse the trend of, you know, mushrooming unemployment that now stands high above 50%, and to also give young people who are highly educated, many of whom have obtained a university degree, a chance, an opportunity, a future, something productive to engage in. Those political conditions would have to change to begin to address the root of the challenge there.
There will be many people listening who perhaps are quite surprised at sort of just how well educated a lot of this younger population is. I mean, given, you know, the circumstances they live under.
Yeah, no, it's the Palestinian people in general have obtained a very high level of literacy, about 99%, among the highest throughout the Middle East region. As a culture, as a people, they are deeply dedicated to education. It's something they care about a lot. And for most Palestinians in Gaza, despite the blockade, despite the lack of access to anything outside of Gaza, most families, most children, most students want nothing more than to obtain a university degree. And I think our graduates really speak for themselves, because many of them have, in fact, despite all odds, against all adverse conditions, gone on to some of the most prestigious universities in the world and have achieved extraordinary results. One of our graduates from Gaza recently was part of the team that sent a rover up to Mars.
I mean, I know last year the UN put out a report saying what the costs had been of the blockade in terms of the poverty levels, in terms of just the cost of the economy there. I just wonder what the potential is, really.
So the potential for there to be a thriving, vibrant economy that employs youth in Gaza is extremely high. And the reason, of course, is that we're talking about a very entrepreneurial group of people who've obtained high levels of secondary and tertiary education. So what is needed is really an easing of the blockade to allow for a greater movement of people and goods to start to rebuild the economy there. These are people who do not want to rely on UNRWA food assistance. These are people who prefer to have the resources to purchase their own food.
UNRWA's Elizabeth Campbell. She speaks of Gaza's potential, and it's saying something that despite the blockade, the terrible internet connections, not to mention crumbling and now damaged infrastructure, Gaza is home to a fledgling startup scene. So said the World Bank in a report in 2018, businesses pressing on despite the odds. Asma Abu Mazid has come across some of these startups through her work as Women's Economic Coordinator for Oxfam in Gaza.
We have one startup who saw the experience of growing figs in a green houses in Turkey. And when he came back to Gaza, he's like, I want to pilot that. I want to see how I'm going to provide for myself an income, but in a very innovative way that utilize my 4 years studying as an agronomist. And that business has been supported yet in the last military offenses. It incurred some partial damage. But when we visited that business, he continued to say, you know, no, I want to repair everything and I want to continue pursuing my dream. This is my survival.
I mean, what kind of issues would someone like that have faced trying to set that up? If you can give me a sort of a picture of how difficult it is to start a business like that in Gaza.
young people who are really suffering from high level of unemployment rate, and they think and try to innovate in a context that is very limiting for them to come up with a business idea. And then they have to wait for 6 months so that the equipment that is necessary for their businesses are stuck at the crossing or cannot enter, or it takes so long to be imported from a certain country to enter Gaza. So two most important things is lifting the blockade, because the blockade is affecting the daily reality of the Palestinian businesses that leaves them less competitive compared to other businesses. Just as I give you an example about the electricity, the transaction cost of transporting anything, any product like furniture from Gaza is 4 times the usual cost because of the blockade. So yes, lifting the blockade is the first priority, and having a political stability is a second one, so that we can have like a more investment, so that we can work and utilize the excellent and skilled Palestinian labor that exists in Gaza.
When you speak to businesses, people trying to make a living in Gaza, how many people just want to see an end to Hamas being there? Because in the end, that blockade exists because of Hamas.
I think what the people want, whether they are civilians as an employee or like businesses, is to have and to live in a free, to live in it with a freedom and with a dignified life.
Sure. Was economic life easier before Hamas took control?
The economic life, I think, looking at it, is not an easy comparison. For example, looking at it historically, the Palestinians 100 years ago, where there was no occupation, they were exporting barley to the UK. Palestinians at early 50s and 60s were exporting citrus to Eastern Europe. So it shows that when there is no blockade, when there is no occupational policies, the Palestinians were able to tap into their potential. But you can, looking at the agriculture sector by itself, historically and throughout the past decades, you can see how the agriculture has been deteriorating because of Israel control over resources, whether it's water resources in Gaza and in the West Bank. So I think the question should be, is how Israeli occupation policies are hindering the growth of the Palestinian economic and prosperity.
Asma Abu Mazid, she mentions Gaza's agricultural exporting businesses of the past. It's something Manal White knows a lot about.
Since the blockade in 2007, it hasn't been possible to get anything out of Gaza.
Manal there is managing director of London-based Zaytoun.
Zaytoun is a social enterprise. It's a business with a purpose beyond profit, established in 2004 as a community interest company to support the livelihoods of Palestinian producers and benefit the largest number of producers. So at the moment, we can only get products out of the West Bank. The product range includes olive oil, hand-rolled giant couscous called maftoul, friquet, almonds, and medjool dates.
And where do you sell them?
We sell them in independent retailers and online. So we get products out of the West Bank, and it's not easy. The occupation imposes a lot of restrictions on movement of people and goods. It adds to the cost of goods and to the timelines of our shipments. Of course, the problems faced by people on the ground add to their cost of production and to the difficulties in general of participating in world commerce. Basically, Gaza is sealed off by land, sea, and air, essentially cut off from the rest of Palestine and the rest of the world.
Did you at any point, did you source produce from Gaza?
Yes. So in 2006, we had the one shipment of this handmade giant couscous maftoul that was made by women's cooperatives in Gaza. It was transported to the West Bank, and through a company in the West Bank, we were able to import it to the UK.
And that's no longer possible now?
That has not been possible since the blockade in 2007.
If the blockade wasn't there, what would the potential be for produce out of Gaza?
So speaking with international agencies operating in Gaza, we understand that if the blockade were lifted and the crossings were opened, a whole load of other barriers would be removed that would enable Gazans to import the necessary inputs and access basic resources such as water and electricity. And from that, a virtuous circle would ensue where their risks are reduced, they'd be able to invest in building an infrastructure to produce high quality goods, because then they would know that there is a market and trade opportunities available to them that would give them a return on their investment. Their output would then increase, economies of scale would start to work in their favor, bringing down their cost of production and making their products more competitive. So there would be a multitude of opportunities in a variety of sectors, including, from what I hear, textiles, furniture, as well as technology and, of course, agriculture.
And would there be demand for these goods around the world, do you think?
Absolutely. There would absolutely be demand for their goods. I mean, Zaytoun was established to support the livelihoods of Palestinian producers across all of historical Palestine. Our business with the West Bank, as I said, is impacted by high costs due to the occupation and restrictions on movement. In Gaza, you have to imagine that all these problems that result from the occupation are magnified manifold. Trading with Gaza is an element that we're sorely missing, particularly as the need for economic support there is so great. We have no doubt that we would have great demand for products from Gaza. We hear that there is an olive oil sector. They grow a variety of olives of very high quality and in abundance. Their olive oil would be very, very welcome here in the UK. We think our customers would be thrilled to be able to enjoy it.
Manal White of London-based Zaytoun. Well, given how difficult it is to make ends meet in Gaza, I had a last question for Oxfam's Asma Abu Mazid.
I have to ask you this, and it could be construed as a political question, but I mean it from a humanitarian and economic point of view. Why would anyone continue to want to live in Gaza, given all these constraints?
I asked this question to my father, to be honest, even before, like when he had the opportunity and can, like, you know, relocate somewhere else. And his only answer is like, this is my home. Like, this is where my grandparents, my father has lived. This is where I have my memories. This is where I belong. And I think that's the sentiment of most of Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank, is that this is their home. And just because they are living under occupation does not mean that we cannot aspire and we cannot really try to live where our lands, where our history also exists.
Asma Abu Mazid of Oxfam in Gaza. She brings us to the end of This Business Daily. Today's producers were Frey Lindsay and Ivana Davidovich. I'm Manuela Zaragoza, and Business Daily is back again tomorrow, same place, same time.
These attackers have no fear.
They would have killed me had they found out.
It was really intense.
I just saw the entire financial markets grinding to a halt.
Was North Korea behind one of the most audacious cybercrimes ever attempted?
So many millions of dollars.
There was chaos.
It was almost like a perfect crime.
How in the world did this happen?
The Lazarus Heist. From the BBC World Service.
It was a very scary situation.
Catch up with the whole series now, wherever you get your podcasts.